across the country, all the way from San Diego. It's really awesome because it's like you change your place, right? You change the location, but you go where the body of Christ has no boundary like that. You can go 3,000 miles from one corner to the farthest corner south, that's where we live, all the way to the farthest corner north, and the love of God is the same. That's so awesome. I just felt so cared for and loved ever since, you know, I got off the plane. And so it's going to be an exciting day today. And just like Scott said, this is about, what is the title again? The Evidence of the Spirit of God. But the subtitle that I really want to look at is actually called The Evidence of the Spirit, A Way of Life. Because we could sit here and we could look at every definition, we could look at all these wonderful words and study and read record after record after record in the Bible, and it would just be words. But what God really wants for us and what He said in the manifestations is that this is all about love. This is about living a life of love. It's a way of life. It's what God has made available to us in Christ Jesus. And it's given to every man, every believer, to have. And so, if it's something we have, we might as well use it. And so that's all we're really going to do today and tomorrow, is take a look at help to understand how the manifestations of the Spirit work together. They are a way of life. It's a practice and things that we can do every single day, every moment of the day. And when we know a little bit more about it and know how they work together, then that's where the more than conquerors and victorious and power and all these things come pouring out. So, you ready?
Yes.
Okay. Let's go. When you look at the word evidence, you have to picture that you're in a courtroom, right? And the adversary, Satan, or the devil, however you want to call him, the evil one, he is the accuser. He's on the prosecuting side. And Jesus Christ is our defense attorney. And He stands on one side, and the devil stands on the other side, and God is the judge. He's up on the big podium, and he's wearing the black robe. And Jesus Christ presents the evidence. I died for this person. Oh, we're the one who's on the stand, okay. And Jesus Christ says, I paid the price for this person. Yes, they were guilty. Yes, they did all these things. But the price has been paid already. And so he's presenting the evidence as our defense attorney. And Satan is still going, but no. That person has to pay guilt and condemnation and everything. I'm not going to let that person get away with being set free. And it's back and forth and back and forth. But the evidence is there already. And that's what the manifestations are. They are the proof, standing in the courtroom, before the enemy, the prosecuting attorney, and saying, no, we have Christ in us. The price has been paid. And so when God, the judge, is looking at us, he's saying, bam, 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 not guilty. This person is free. Go now. Go and tell others about it. That's what the manifestations are all about. And the best witness, you know, is one who's an eyewitness, right? In a courtroom type of situation, an eyewitness is the best witness. Well, the eyewitness that is standing up for us is the Lord Jesus Christ. So it's not our own defense. We don't have to stand in our own defense. He is standing there for us. And he's saying, done. It's done. You already have everything
that you will ever need, and it's given to you as this gift wrap package. So now we can just learn a little bit about what we do with it, because we've been set free to walk out of that courtroom and into life to be more than a conqueror. So let's turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 12. Verse 7. Now the way that I'm going to present this little seminar is that every session or every teaching has a principle. And they're really simple things, but they're things I think we can kind of, you know, have as a nail to hang the coat on, so to speak. So the first one in this session is called you should seek a profiting opportunity. Alright, now you'll get the hang of what that means as we go along. But we'll read 1 Corinthians 12, verse 7. Now the manifestation of the Spirit is given to each one as it is profitable for him. Now the manifestation of the Spirit is given to each one. That means it's given to everyone. Just like every single person who's born again has the Spirit of Christ within them, right? In that Spirit is given the manifestation. So the first word that we need to look at is manifestation. Now, if you've ever listened to any of my teachings before, you know that I love to study Aramaic and Hebrew, and that really a lot of the things I've been learning lately have to do with the word pictures that the language presents, because both Hebrew and Aramaic are action-oriented languages, and the actions underneath the words help us to understand what they mean. Because I could say manifestation and you go, what is a manifestation? have you heard the word manifestation and go, well, I don't know what that is. So the word picture means just simply to lift off the cover. So I was thinking about a bowl of spaghetti sauce on the stove, right? And you have the cover on it pretty tight so it can simmer. And somebody walks in the room and there's, what's cooking? And they go over to the stove and they lift off the cover and go, oh, wow, spaghetti sauce. This is awesome. We're going to have spaghetti tonight. Yay. It's a really dumb illustration. But that's the really simple way to understand everything about the manifestations. It's lifting off the cover of the Spirit so you can smell it, taste it, touch it, do something with it. The spaghetti sauce isn't supposed to stay on the stove and you never eat it. It's not to just be admired. Oh, I'll stir it and go, oh, wow, that smells really good. And then just leave it there forever, right? The point is to eat it. But so when we uncover the Spirit with the manifestations, it's so that we can use them, enjoy them, have them there to do. Just an example you can write down if you wanted to about Samuel. When Samuel was first learning to hear the word of the Lord, it says that the word was not revealed to him yet. Revealed is another way you can translate manifestation. Or revelation. It wasn't uncovered to him yet. He thought, you know, when he heard the voice where God said, Samuel, Samuel, he thought it was Eli, right? Until the word was revealed to him where it was uncovered. That was God. That was God. And that started a lifetime for Samuel of God talking with him and sharing things with him. He never stopped hearing the Lord's voice from that moment. And that's how it can be for all of us. If you think back the first time you ever were conscious of the Lord speaking to you, that's how it works. So we're going to be talking a lot more about that later. So the first thing to remember is the manifestation means to lift off the cover. Okay, got it? All right. Now, the manifestation of the Spirit is given Okay, that's another thing to see. It's given, right? It's not something we operate. We're on command, you know. Say, I want revelation right now. It's like what Larry was talking about with the cell phone. The cell phone is always on, right? And you're ready to receive a call, and it's charged up and all this great stuff. But do you control it when someone calls you?
No.
It's available all the time for someone to call you, and you have it ready, but you don't control when someone calls you. So God is the one who gives the manifestation. And it is profitable for him. All right. The word profitable is a noun, actually. And we think about profit, like if you, like I'm a bookkeeper, so, you know, I'm always keeping the books of what's on the black and what's on the red side. You know, these are all the expenses, this is the income. Does it balance what's left over? Well, what's left over is profit. There is, if it's in the black and you end up at the end of the year with $100,000 in the bank, it was profit, right? Okay, so we have to just kind of change our thinking about this word profit, because it's like profiting is more how you would say it as a noun. It's a profiting. And profiting, you kind of, it kind of leaves a blank there. Like a profiting what? What is the profit? Did you ever stop and think, well, okay, the manifestation is given to profit. What's the profit? Or what is this profit? Like, there's maybe some special profit for speaking in tongues, or there's a special profit for word of knowledge, word of wisdom. Is that what it's talking about? No. It's talking about in a profitable or profiting situation, you could put the word situation there, or opportunity, or time. Here's a time. I walk into a room. Someone is really sick, and they have a need, right? That's a profiting time. It's a situation, an opportunity for the manifestations to start working, for God to energize, to help be a prophet. So, we need to know what the word prophet means. And I got this really cool board up here. Look at this. I'm going to write some Aramaic letters for you today. A-Z-R. It's called Azar. And this is a picture of, and you read it from right to left, okay? This is the word for eye. This is the word for weapon or enemy. And this is the word for man or head or to be first. Okay, and you could say see. So this is a picture of an eye, this is a picture of a weapon, and this is a picture of a head. You put it together, a prophet means to see the enemy first. Anything that's a help, advantage, benefit, something that is going to be able to have $100,000 in the bank at the end of the time. What it's going to take, though, to get to that profit is to see the enemy first. Yeah, it's really, really cool. So we start to get the idea of the different synonyms, and you have to put it all together. But the manifestation, the lifting up of the cover of the Spirit, is given, it's energized by God, to each one as there is a time when you need to have the enemy be exposed. A profiting time, whatever profiting that is. I sometimes like to change up the words so that it just mixes it up in my mind, instead of saying, oh, it's to profit with all. I don't know what that means. So, for a benefiting time. For a benefiting time. Oh, a benefiting that's any time. That could be any time. Any time. But it's like the cell phone being on. It's any time. Any time somebody could call you. Any time God could give you a word of wisdom, a word of knowledge. Oh, now we've got to go see, because right after this, he's in this particular passage, it starts listing what the manifestations are. And the reason that they're in here like this, it lists how they work with the profiting part. And there are two key things in here. The first one is about how the word, when it says in verse 8, okay, there is a word of wisdom that is given to him by the Spirit. Given to a person by the Spirit, right? Okay, so it's just setting the first one is word of wisdom. And it is given. You could say that word given, it's like to make one's own. It's given to you personally. It's not given to George only, or Kelly only, or Gino only. It's given to the person, to, like, you take it as your own. All right, so every time in here where it says it's given, you could repeat that through every single one. It's given to me. It's given to me. It's given to me. It's given to me. Hey, let's get it. It's given to me. I'm glad it's given to you too, but I want to know it's given to me so that I can live this stuff. All right, that's the first point. The second point is that where it says for another, there is a word of wisdom that's given to him by the Spirit. Now, for another, a word of knowledge by the same Spirit. For another what? Yeah, benefiting time. That's what you put in as the ellipsis. There's a word missing there. Another what? Some people say it's another person. Like, only you get this, and you get that, and you get that, and that's how it works. Because it already just said up above that the manifestation is given to every man, right? Okay, so that can't be another person. And it also can't be another kind of prophet. Like, what is the different prophet? If there's prophet, if the enemy's exposed and there's going to be a benefit, it's going to be a benefit for every time. It's not a unique thing. There's not a certain kind of a prophet for one manifestation versus another. So it has to be about the time or the situation. And there are two different words for another in here. And so what when you know that, they actually divide the list of the manifestations of the Spirit into three sections, where there's two first, then there's five, and then there's two. The first two are word of wisdom and word of knowledge, because that word another in verse 8 is the Greek word allos, A-L-L-O-S, and it means another of the same kind. So those two go together, wisdom, word of wisdom, and word of knowledge, because they're the same kind. Then verse 9 starts out for another, and that is the Greek word heteros, H-E-T-E-R-O-S. And that means another of a different kind. So we're talking about that the list has two different kinds in here. That lists for another, heteros, faith, for another, and that word there, another, is allos again. So verse 9 starts with heteros, meaning another of a different kind. Then then all the rest of the anothers in from 9 to 10 are allos again. So the same kind, the same kind, the same kind, the same kind, the same kind. That is faith, gifts of healing, miracles, prophecy, and discerning of spirits are all the same kind. Those five are the same kind. Then you get to the middle of verse 10. Now for another, then it turns back to heteros again. And now another of a different kind is kinds of tongues and interpretation of tongues. So you end up with having the description be 2, then 5, and then 2. There are 3 different kinds. Word of wisdom, word of knowledge, right? Then faith, healing, miracles, prophecy, and discerning of spirits are all in here. And then tongues and interpretation are a different kind. Now, I know that we have, or a lot of people teach about how it should be 3, 3, and 3. But that's how they work. That's not how it's described, how they're to be used as profit. So this is the difference in 1 Corinthians 12, is that the context of this section in here is about what's a prophet and how to have a profiting time. What do you do in a profiting time? All right. So I want to just call them something different so that we can understand what they are. These, instead of this being the revelation manifestations, I must be getting behind the mic or something.
We should pull this up.
Okay, let's do that. Pull it out.
You stay.
All right. The word revelation is the word for manifestation. So I'm not going to call word of wisdom and word of knowledge revelation manifestations. I'm going to call them information. Because that's how they are used in a profiting time. All right, these 5 are action. Faith, healing, miracles, prophecy, and discerning of spirits. And then these I'm going to call encouragement. It's just an arbitrary name. It's not anything, you know, like that we have to make a doctrine out of or anything like that, right? But the first 2 are about information, and then these are the action ones. That's the main thing I want you to see, is that prophecy and discerning spirits go in the action part. And we're going to learn more about it. This is just kind of like setting the overall view, so don't get too worried about not understanding each thing. But the main point right now is that the profiting time is you see the enemy first, right? And that the way the manifestations are divided and how they work is that there are information, action, and encouragement. Okay? So now, let's go look at a passage. Because the main thing is that we can't separate how they all work together very easily. But once you know a little bit about each one, then you actually can spot them, right? And see how they work together. I just want to reiterate. This is a lifestyle. This is a way of life. The only reason to stand up here and start talking about trying to explain one or the other of them is so to help us to see how they work together and how to implement them in our lives. Because it's God who energizes it. So he can choose any which one. I have my cell phone on, right? I can get a picture, I can get a text, I can get a message, I can get a voicemail, and I can also get a phone call. Those are like examples of all the different ways that God can communicate. 9 different things. It's his job to figure out which one I need at any time. But let's go look at a passage that is really, really cool. Mark chapter 9. And we'll begin to see how this all works together. This is the record of the man, the father, whose boy was an epileptic, and he had brought the boy to the disciples at the time when Jesus was on the Mount of Transfiguration. And the disciples couldn't heal him, the boy. And when Jesus comes down off the mountain in verse 17, he's asking what's going on. So one of the crowd answered and said, "Teacher, I brought my son to you because he has a spirit that does not speak. He has a dumb spirit." Now this is the father talking, right? That he says, "My son has a spirit that does not speak. And sometimes it grabs him and knocks him down and he foams and gnashes his teeth and he languishes. And I asked your disciples to cast it out and they were not able." So now this is the father, right? He knows his son has a need. He's had this need since he was a child. And the spirit is controlling the child. So he's aware of that. So Jesus says to him, "Oh, faithless generation, how long must I be with you and how long must I endure you? Bring him to me." That's a pretty harsh thing to say. What'd you say? Here's this father, he has a need. Now we have a profiting situation. Right? There's a need. There's a need. The father is bringing a child to the disciples and they don't know what to do, or they tried to do something, it didn't work. Oh, what? Okay. So Jesus' first comment is, "Oh, faithless generation." Why? Because he didn't do the see the enemy first. That's the only reason why the disciples could not cast it out. They were looking at the boy, and he's falling on the ground and foaming, and all these things are going on, and so they were looking at the senses, saying, "Oh my goodness, well, God, you can do something, I know you can, but I don't know what." And Jesus just walks in and goes, "No, you have to focus here. Focus. What? What to do? What do we do when we come into a profiting situation? You cannot look at the five senses." Number one. Okay. Number two. Verse 20. They brought him to him. And when the spirit saw him, immediately it knocked him down. And he fell on the ground and was violently shaken and he foamed. So the accuser is over there going, "I've got evidence. Look, I've got evidence that this boy will never, ever get free from this." So he throws him on the ground, foaming, all this stuff, violently shaking. And Jesus is just going, "Yeah, all right, you did your thing. That's your evidence. But watch what God can do now." And so Jesus asked his father, "How long has it been since he was this way?" And he said to him, "Since his youth." And you go, why did he just like start commanding? But instead, he was so gentle. He uses one of these five actions right here because he got information from God to say, ask the Father how long this has happened to him. So it starts taking the focus away from the child being in this state. So There's part of the action in there. How long has it been? And so the father says, since his youth. And then he begins to really cry out and share his pain, really. Many times he has thrown him into the fire and into the water to destroy him. So the cry of the man comes, "But whatever you are able to do, help me and have compassion on us." And that word "help" there is the same word that you get the word profiting from. He's going, "I don't know what to do. I've tried everything. I just don't know how to handle this." And so he's crying out, right, for profiting. For help me, help me. And have compassion on us. And Jesus says, "Oh, okay, whatever you are able to do, help me and have compassion on us." What does the King James say, verse 22? Somebody read it.
"At times they have cast him into the fire and into the waters to destroy him. But if thou canst do anything, have compassion on us and help us."
Okay, and that's really more how you need to read it, is if the Father says to Jesus Christ, "If you can help us, if you have something that you can benefit us or profit us or do for us, have compassion on us and do it. But he's putting a little if in there, or whatever, or maybe you could do something. I don't know if you can, but I really want this, but I don't know what I'm even asking. Right? So, this is where Jesus turns it around. In verse 23, Jesus said to him, "If you are able to believe, everything will be possible to him who believes." Now that's how it's read in a lot of the different manuscripts. But there are some manuscripts that take the word believe, the first word believe, out, where you turn it around to be a question. Jesus is not putting it back on the Father to believe, saying, "Well, if you can believe, then everything will happen." That's not what he's saying. He's saying, "If you can," what do you mean? You are talking to the Son of God here. If I can, of course I can. That's what you had to understand, that if you came to me and you said, "Help me," that I would go to God and I would get the answer that you need, and that's what would cause the deliverance. If you can, of course you can, because everything is possible to him who believes. He's basically saying, "Well, I believe. I can do this." That's all you had to do. Because see, if the Father could believe, the Son would already be healed. And that's so much the case in any of our situations in life where we don't, you know, someone needs healing or they need an answer. You go, "I do believe, but I don't know how to get it." So there's this cry, right? So what Jesus is saying, all you have to do is come to me. Because I believe, I'm going to see the enemy first. I'm going to go to God and ask exactly what to do. And he will tell me, and I will speak that out. And that's all you have to put your trust in. You don't have to find it somewhere within yourself. You can just look at me and do what I say and trust that I went to God and he gave me the answer, and then that's what you do. So that's why the father in verse 24 says, immediately the father of the boy cried out, mourning, and said, "I believe, my Lord. Help the lack of my faith. Help my unbelief. I believe you can heal him." That's what he's saying. "I believe you can heal him." Like if I call up Dan and I ask him, "Dan, something's going on in my body. It's just, I don't know what it is. Pray for me, will you please?" And so he starts praying. I put my trust that God will tell him what I need. And then, bam, there's the information, there's the action, there's the whatever you need, encouragement. And they all work together. So when the Father says, I believe you can heal him. When Jesus saw that the people ran and gathered about him, he rebuked that unclean spirit and said to it, "Dumb spirit that does not speak, I command you, come out of him and do not enter him again." And that demon cried out, and he bruised him much, and he came out. And he was like a dead man, so that many said, "Uh-oh, he's dead." Now what? But again, see the enemy first. He just was not looking at the senses. He takes the boy by the hand, lifts him up, says, "Here you go." Can you imagine how much rejoicing there was at that point? Wow, this boy, and even the disciples, they were just in awe. I'm like, wow, this is fantastic. The boy got totally healed because Jesus just went to God and said, "Oh, this is the evidence, this is the proof. I'm not going to tolerate anything less than quick healing. All you have to do is trust in me," and bam, there was the healing. Now later, the disciples go, "Well, how come we couldn't trust him out?" And some texts have it in there, some don't, but I believe it's supposed to be in there. It says that this kind does not come out except by prayer and fasting. That's verse 29. He said to him, this kind cannot be cast out by anything except by fasting and by prayer. And fasting is not just, you know, not eating food or going out of your diet or anything like that. The true fast is described in Isaiah 58. So I want to just read the verse. Because this is really why the disciples didn't cast it out. And it's also an answer to all of us whenever there is a time where we can't cast something out or there isn't a deliverance that we're seeking. Is really this is how we can change the focus to be about God in Christ via the Spirit and not about ourselves. Isaiah 58 and verse 5 says, is it such a fast that I have chosen a day for a man to afflict his soul? Is it to bow down his head as a bulrush and to spread sackcloth and ashes under him? Wilt thou call this a fast and an acceptable day to the Lord? So verse 6 is the key. Is not this the fast that I have chosen? To loose the bands of wickedness, to undo the heavy burdens, to let the oppressed go free, and that you break every yoke. See the enemy first. Loose the bands of wickedness. Let the oppressed go free. All those four things in there to break every yoke. He goes on and he says, is it not to deal thy bread to the hungry, and that thou bring the poor that are cast out to thy house? And when thou seest the naked, that thou cover him, and that thou hide not thyself from thine own flesh. Then shall thy light break forth as the morning, and thy health shall spring forth speedily. And thy righteousness shall go before thee, and the glory of the Lord shall be thy reward. Then thou shalt call, and the Lord shall answer. Thou shalt cry, and he shall say, here I am.
Amen.
That's the promise. That's the only thing that the disciples didn't do. See, they believed that the boy could be healed. They had seen the miracles, but they were doing it by their five senses. And they were looking at the five senses. And what they should have been doing is just looking to God, saying, God, I'm calling out to you. You tell me where the enemy is. How do I fix this? What to do about it? Exactly, step by step by step by step. And that's what Jesus Christ did. That's the introduction.
It's
beautiful. So, take a break.
So,
Jan.
Yes, sir.
We're the Jesus Christ in that situation.
That's right.
Yeah, when we read that, we see ourselves.
That's right, exactly.